Hey, good morning, Isaac.
Good morning, Pat.
Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Pat Lynn and Isaac Johnson. We're coming back at you with Take the Word for It, the podcast where we take topics, you know, that occur in the world today and try to use scripture to help us navigate what's going on in the world. And we are spending this entire season talking about marriage. Lucky for us, we have a marriage expert in our buddy Isaac Johnson, host Isaac Johnson, who is helping navigate these things. So, Isaac, man, how are you today? How are you doing?
I'm good. It is a balmy 12 degrees in Alaska, but the sun is out and spring is on its way.
12 degrees, man. Wow. It's been super cold everywhere. We, you know, taking the last couple of the weeks off from the show because my family had some extreme sickness, and I know you had some things going on. And actually, we've been on a road trip this whole time. I left Squim a few weeks ago, I think three weeks ago now, and headed down to Phoenix, Arizona, and all the way through California and Nevada on the way to Phoenix. Man, it was just freezing. I remember one night. We RV'd, and so we were at an RV park, and RVing's a great way to do things with kids. We just super love that. But when it's cold, holy smokes, it's hard to get those heaters blowing, because it was down to about 12 a few times on our trip, and we just couldn't wait to get all the way down to Phoenix. But speaking of that trip, you know, my family, one of our missions is to share the hope that we have in Jesus through my story anywhere we can go. And so we went down to Phoenix and shared in Gilbert at Gilbert Christian and picked up a few listeners in Gilbert. So if you're listening from Gilbert, thanks for joining us today. And then also went to San Diego over to Trinity Church over there. And I know we had a few people, you know, listen in from Trinity. So welcome to you and everyone else. Isaac, did you know, I was just checking, we actually picked up listeners in Germany and France over the last 2 weeks. Isn't that awesome? International.
That is awesome. I didn't know we were going global.
No, we've gone global, and so we started this because one of the issues in the world today certainly is kind of the falling apart of the family and. Having households, people growing up in all kinds of families that are looking different, and that's okay, but we want to encourage a nuclear family with a mom and a dad and kids raising children together in a, you know, from a biblical point of view, and help people to do that. And so we believe we have content that is helpful in doing that. And just saying all that to say, if you're listening and could share the show, you know, that's why we're here. We're here because we want to help people, and we want to use the knowledge of the Word of God and what God has done in both my life and in Isaac's life to help others navigate the world that we live in. And so today we have an interesting question or thought that we're working towards, and I just man, the title even kind of gets me, Isaac, because the title is Destructive or Disappointing, What Kind of Marriage Do You Have? Now let me ask you, why is this the title? Like, what that doesn't sound very encouraging to me. So explain to me how we got to that subject for today.
Well, because when I've worked with a lot of couples, the temptation is to want to see your marriage as destructive, when in reality, it's probably more disappointing. In fact, destructive marriages are more the rarity, but, you know, Satan really starts whispering in our ear. John Eldridge talks about the fact that we make agreements with the devil without meaning to, and, you know, the wife that we loved in the morning is now the person we hated by night. And we believe that we just suddenly married the Antichrist by mistake. And so it's something that our word choice, how you define something, is going to determine how you're going to view it. And if you, I just tell couples a lot of times, be really careful before you call your spouse a narcissist or you say they're gaslighting or things. Those are very serious terms, and they tell your brain then how to respond. So I think being able to identify clearly define what kind of marriage you have is important.
Okay. So let me ask you this then. You know, I think one of the issues that we have around this, you know, we talked in our last episode about the fact that that the idea of a non-arranged marriage or a marriage where you go out and you meet somebody that you fall in love with and, you know, everything's hunky-dory and then you're going to love each other for the rest of your lives and everything's going to be wonderful is a rather new idea. Like, within the last 150 years, we've gone to that. And prior to that, marriage would be arranged. And so your parents would go out and arrange a marriage for you. There's a difference there in the thought pattern that are around those two things and the thoughts that you have going into it. How would somebody who has an arranged marriage think someone differently about marriage than somebody who, say, you know, is going through a disappointing marriage or, you know, they're disappointed in where their marriage is at? Do you understand the question I'm asking?
Yeah, I think if you had an arranged marriage, you would go into it with the expectation that this is just the best it's going to be. And so a lot of things that maybe the world would call destructive, you might just go, well, that's normal. And I'm not saying that they're good or bad, but I think we just got to be careful that, you know, there's a lot of people who just said, you know, the world wants to make marriage out to be a Hallmark moment, like 24/7. And it's just not realistic. And so I think an arranged person in arranged marriage would just be like, well, it's going to be disappointing. Heck, I didn't even get to choose the person, you know, so going to be a bit of a letdown. And so their baseline of starting expectation wise would be different, dramatically different than the romantic ideals that we have today.
Yeah, and I think also probably a contributor there might be the fact that we live in a society that is, you know, a microwave society. Everything's fast food, drive through, microwave moment. You want something instantly. You want that gratification. You don't want to work towards something. And in the idea of an arranged marriage or someone who in a culture where you had to work to do all of those things, where you couldn't just drive through Starbucks and get a coffee, you actually had to, you know, do some work and grinding it to make it in the morning and have some patience. You have this idea of work is built into your lifestyle, and so you're used to working towards making things better and doing them well. And in the society that we're in, we're kind of like, hey, if it's not going well, I'm just going to try something different. I'm going to trade in this item or move on to the next item. And so, you know, biblically, the Bible's pretty clear that a husband and wife are meant to sharpen each other and to make each other better. And that it's not just the husband and wife in a marriage, but God is actually the center of your marriage. Ephesians, Paul uses the idea of the comparison between the church and Jesus, and the church being, you know, God's bride, Jesus' bride, to compare that to actually our marriages. And so, and here's a new thing: it introduces a husband as a head of a household. Now, we're not actually going to spend time on the idea of a husband being the head of a household today, but it says just as like Christ is the head of the church, the husband's the head of the household. Let me just read this for you, actually, and then I'll do a little explaining on it. But Ephesians 5:22-27, talking about submission, it says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body and himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Husbands," now it gives a commandment, "love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy without blemish." Now, what this is not saying is that a husband actually makes a wife holy. In the idea of submission here, I'm bringing this up and brought this verse up because of the fact that the idea of a biblical family in today's society is a hard thing for people to swallow. But if you actually do some research on this and look into it, the words that Paul uses for submission in the Greek don't actually mean like I'm better than you, like the husband would be better than the wife or rules over her. It is more of an encouragement that there is an order in the family and the two are equals. And so in Roman society, when Paul lived, the common thing there was that the man was in charge and the woman was not to have an opinion. She just listened and did. The Bible actually brings an encouragement in this order of submission that the two are to submit to God as a couple and to work together. And I think we have this idea in marriages today that we put ourselves first, whether it's the wife putting herself first or the husband putting himself first. We are trained in America to be selfish, and I think that makes marriage look different. So when you counsel people, Isaac, and you have people come to your office that are having struggles in marriage, how often is it that they're struggling over something like that, that they both want to be the authority, that they don't want to concede or actually partner together in the marriage? Is that a common difficulty?
Yeah, it is. And it's research even shows, Dr. Gottman said that one of the things that will predict a divorce is couples who cannot accept influence from one another. So it's the fact that they're saying, hey, we're both equal in value in this. Now, maybe biblically we play different roles, but in value of what we have to offer, we're equal. And I need to be able to accept influence from my wife and see her opinions as valid just as much as she needs to be able to accept that from me. And one of the biggest issues couples have is, you know, they get a little disappointed and then all of a sudden now they feel justified in I'm right, you're wrong. My view is better than your view. And I always say there's no reward for being right in marriage. You know, so you're still sleeping on the couch even if you won the argument. What did you get? Yeah. You know? So I think being able to see that as it's not, you're never going to have a win-win in marriage. That's not possible. But the idea is to see that each perspective is equally important.
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, 1 Peter says, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman. Like we are to honor our wives. And if you look at that picture as the church, you know, as God's bride, as Jesus' bride, what did he do for the church? Jesus literally laid his life down for the church. And so even, you know, if a male is the stronger physically out of the two, you know, or the true leader of the family, what does the true leader do? He lays down his life so that the rest of the family can be successful. And so I think that's an important picture, that leadership means sacrifice. And we need to be willing to work and to see both sides of the relationship is equally important. And here's like just another thing. If you're a guy out there and your ego, you know, and your view of yourself as the authority or the bigger person in the marriage is causing issues, it's not going to get better unless that changes. Because your wife's never going to stop presenting the fact that those issues are there and making it difficult on her. So let me just ask you a few questions about this, Isaac. What would be the difference between an emotionally destructive marriage? Let's say that, you know, maybe you can identify what type of things signal that your marriage is emotionally destructive, and a marriage that's, let's just say, disappointing for right now. Because both of these things can be worked through and can be pushed through and can be, you know, moved towards a healthier place. But I think it's important to identify what they are so you know what you're dealing with, and then you can talk about what kind of tools do we use to move forward. So what is an emotionally destructive marriage? If I'm sitting in one of those and need to know it, what are the kind of things I should be looking for?
Well, there's several, but we'll just boil it down to just a few things. And the first thing we want to remind ourselves is that, like we said, emotionally destructive marriages are the exception, not the rule. So you might be in one, but just to assume that you are, you know, without really looking at it is kind of destructive in itself. But if you believe that you are, just a few things that you can look at is, one, an emotionally destructive marriage has a repetitive negative pattern where a person's dignity, personhood, freedom of choice is regularly denied by the controlling spouse. So in an emotionally destructive marriage, you're feeling, if you're the person on the receiving end of that, you feel like you have no say, you feel like you have no rights in the marriage, and it's repetitive. It's not just once in a while kind of thing. It's happening on a daily, moment-by-moment basis. The second thing is people in an emotionally destructive marriage often feel physically ill. They will, when I've worked with them, they're coming to me, they've got anxiety and fear, and they're actually, it's presenting itself in like stomach issues, ulcers, can't sleep, all these kinds of things. Because it's so intense and they're feeling it so deeply, they will have physical symptoms. So that's the kind of a way you can kind of tell that again. Wow. And that, you know, you have to make sure that those are attributed to your marriage and not just something you're doing. And then the last thing is, you know, emotionally destructive marriages, they make you feel like you are going crazy. You know, so it's like you start feeling like manipulated, where if you're in an emotionally destructive marriage, the person that's trying to control is constantly blame shifting. And you walk out of every argument going, it started out me bringing up the issue, and by the end of the argument, I was the problem, and my partner never fully takes ownership of anything. You know, so those are kind of three things that if they're happening, and again, that's repetitive. It's not just a once, a thing that just happens sporadically. It's happening continuously. And what I tell people too, if you really want to get to the depth of this, the expert in this area, her name is Leslie Vernick, and that's V-E-R-N-I-C-K, Leslie Vernick. And if you go to her website, leslievernick.com, she walks you through all this. You can take an assessment, and that's a lot more in-depth. And she wrote a book called The Emotionally Destructive Marriage, which I highly recommend, because she's coming from a Christian perspective, and she's saying, like, you know, you might have a disappointing marriage, or it might be destructive. And, you know, and she kind of really walks you through some of the things you could do if it really is destructive. If you're in a disappointing marriage, welcome to the rest of the world. That's just like being married.
My marriage is not disappointing right now.
Right. Yeah, you're the exception, the one.
Right, throw that out and put right now in there. But okay, so what does that look like? What is not? Hey, you know, I'm in a disappointing marriage. What are some things that would identify that? And you're saying if that's you, welcome to the world, and maybe you gotta, it's time to put the big boy or big girl pants on and keep walking. But what does that look like?
Yeah, that's just every marriage. Because you're going to have disappointments every day, you know. Oh, they forgot something, you know, that was important. They said they were going to do something, and then they didn't follow through. You know, it's disappointing. It's, you had expectations of something, and it didn't live up to it. Well, whose marriage, you know, has ever lived up to that unless you live in a Hallmark fantasy constantly? Like, it's just not possible. So disappointment is part of marriage, and how you navigate that and process that is going to determine whether you continue to stay in marriage or you get easily defeated by it. And Satan loves to try to get us to think that disappointments are destructive. You know, oh, you married Hitler. You know, I don't know how you found him, but you did. You know, or you know, you married the one person that was going to destroy everything. And that's generally not true. You're just as, messed up as they are. And
the fact of the matter is that you're both bringing brokenness into a marriage, and you're both going to have areas where you're going to fall short. And so it's learning to live and navigate those shortcomings. And I love what you say about arguing. It's, you know, or fighting. It's not quitting fighting totally. It's learning to fight better so that you recognize when a fight is coming, and, you know, you recognize how to, not throw a harder punch, but to move past what might be an argument, and work through those things, quicker and in healthier ways. I think that's important because, quite honestly, arguments in marriage are probably never going to totally and completely go away. Is that fair to
Right.
say?
Yep.
Okay.
Research backs that up. You know, about
Okay.
70% of the arguments you have in marriage, you will have your entire marriage.
Wow. Well, that's super encouraging.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe this, I'm not making a case where, in case you're listening, thinking that these guys are trying to make cases for not getting married ever, and that's not the truth. We're just trying to help you to work through what you're in or prepare you for what's coming, and I believe that marriage is one of God's greatest gifts, quite possibly the greatest gift, has amazing times and amazing things through too. But everyone needs to figure out how to work through these things because if we don't, it heads towards divorce. And quite frankly, the Bible's like, that's not what marriage is for. You're making a commitment to one person. And another thing you say is that marriage is for holiness, not happiness. So
Right.
explain that idea to me.
Yeah, I mean, we're made to marriage was designed to make us better. And so there's a lot of things in life that are disappointing that mature us. You know,
Yes.
we hang in there and we persevere and we grow from it. But is it disappointing? Yeah, of course we wanted it to be easier, better somehow. But when we can see that my spouse will disappoint me, but being with them makes me a better person. I love the line from the movie As Good as It Gets, where Jack Nicholson says, "You make me want to be a better man."
Dude,
And
that's a great movie.
it is. And it's like an underrated movie, but it's like it's being able to realize, wow, I can look and see that I can say that honestly about my wife. Like, yeah, we've had a lot of disappointments in our marriage, but
Yep.
you know, it's her birthday today. Happy birthday, honey. But it's this idea
Hey.
that she has made me a better person. She is,
Yeah.
I like me a lot better after 22 years. So
Wow, that's amazing. That I like that. That just Yeah, and your spouse should make you want to be a better person. I love that. And that's not just, I'm saying that's, like their fault, like they're forcing you to be a better person, but because you love them, you want to do better. And that's, man, that's just epic. So let me ask you this question. If a person is in an emotionally destructive marriage, like, what do they need to do? What are some things that can help them, well, just this, move that in a better direction in their marriage. What does that person need to do?
if you've, you kind of done the assessment and you've really determined, yes, I am in an emotionally destructive marriage, the first thing you just don't want to do is overreact. Because a lot of people get super defeated and, the only thing I tell people is if you feel physically unsafe, like your spouse is threatening you, they've brandished a weapon or anything like that, you can get out of that situation. You
Yeah.
know, don't analyze that, just leave. I don't want to read about you on the news. But
Right.
if it's not that the case, then before you make any decisions about anything, you want to really Leslie Vernick, she talks about it. You want to make sure that you get your core right, because whether you stay in the marriage or leave, you want to do it from a place of health, emotional healthiness for you. You know, because ultimately you've got to live with you. He can't get away from you. So that's what I tell people all the time. I'm not going to sit here and it would take forever to give you a step-by-step process because every marriage is different and every destructive behavior is a little different. And so I would say, get some counseling, have other you need other voices in your life so you're not just hearing the same things. And don't go to all of your people who have been horribly divorced, who will just tell you what you want to hear.
Right.
They'll talk you off the cliff. You know, I mean, that's not a good thing. So stay away from those people that are, go find objective people, professional people you would trust and let them kind of, then you need to walk through that. And so I would sort of say, and whatever you decide to do, make sure you're doing it. I just talked to a lady the other day who is in an emotionally destructive marriage. But she's like, I want to do it right.
Right.
And then She's challenging him, and so sometimes it's you can do some things to challenge the person that's controlling and stuff. Maybe they don't understand or they're immature. Other times it might require you to leave that marriage. But whatever it is, you want to do it from a place of stability.
Right. Right. And I love what you said about not, gossiping, with kind of the core that every person's got a core that they like to talk to or a group of friends that they like to talk to. And one of the problems that people have, in marriage is we like to, for attention or because it makes us feel good or, because we get justification out of it. We like to share our issues, with our spouse outside of our marriage sometimes when it's tough and we don't know what to do. And the more that you do that and with the more people that you do that, you're just creating a self-fulfilling prophecy where divorce is on its way because those people are just going to encourage you to move past your marriage. And you said you have to live with yourself, and that's true, but you're also responsible to stand before God at some point in time and say, what you did with what he gave you. And so processing that with him is probably pretty important. And I love that you said talking to people who are objective and professionals that know what they're talking about, who are going to encourage you and look at what's actually going on without gossiping or just becoming kind of a horde that's encouraging you to do something that you might regret. And so certainly if you're unsafe, and it feels unsafe, I definitely agree with that get out and don't get hurt. But it's really important that we process these things with the Lord and with people who are actually there to help you, rather than just gossiping about what's going on. And so let me ask you, a couple more questions here, Isaac. It's possible that disappointment in marriage, it could turn to resentment. Like, hey, my wife is disappointing in this way. She did this or left this out or something and hurt my feelings, and that can turn to resentment. How do we actually deal with those things to keep them from becoming resentment? Because resentment can put a brick in your marriage, or a crack in your marriage that takes a long time to heal, and you don't want to go there. So if I'm in a disappointing marriage and there's some things that are going on there that are, constantly just disappointing, how do I keep that from becoming resentment in my life?
Well, the first thing is you got to talk about it. And maybe you start with God. Maybe you're not ready to talk to your spouse about it, but just saying it out loud, if it's mentionable, it's manageable. So you've got to get it out of that 80% brain and just say it out loud and just talk about the disappointment. And then the second thing, disappointment is not about getting the right, expectations or having no expectations. That's a myth. It's about putting it in perspective. So if
Oh,
like
wow.
my spouse, is disappointing me because, they came home late or they have a pattern of coming home late, I have to be able to go, is that the hill I want to die on? Is I have to, what are the good qualities? Gottman talks about the fact that we need to have a 5-to-1 ratio where we're looking at the five positives to make up for every negative. So a lot of times the things
No,
that
no.
we just
Why is that? Why would it be important that I'm thinking about positive things for every negative? How does that
because
affect
that's
my
why you
spouse?
married the person. You didn't marry them for all their negative qualities. You overlooked
Right.
those. That's why you chose to marry them. So when we get down into it, a lot of the disappointments we face in marriage are personality issues. They're just things that that person struggles with that you maybe don't struggle with. They're not
Wow.
sin most of the time.
Wow.
And so that's the thing we got to decide. So I just ask people, filter it through this question, is it sin or is it them? If it's
Wow, that's
sin,
important.
you need to challenge it. If they're gambling or doing things behind your back that are illegal or whatever, challenge that. But if it's just them, it might be something where you need to go through that process of going, hey, I have problems too. As T.D.
Wow.
Jakes says, are they weak or are they wicked? It's just
Wow.
probably their insecurities or their natural flaws in their personality that you have too. So disappointment needs to be talked about and it needs to be processed so that you end up with the right perspective.
Wow.
So that
Well,
otherwise Satan doesn't come in and just go, See, this they always do this. They never do this. Those kinds of big
Right, as
conclusions.
soon as you move towards definitives like always and never, that's not a good place to be because rarely is that true.
Correct.
So just looking at it and trying to fix that is pretty important. Well, I think that's some pretty exceptional tools, dealing and looking at what kind of a marriage you have. And certainly you could still be in the honeymoon phase and be in a super happy marriage right now, but hopefully we gave you some things today for, hey, when things get tough, how do I work through them? Isaac, next week, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about saying the mean things nicer, because
Oh
we
my
want to keep
gosh.
on this peppy theme here.
That is fantastic. Saying the mean things nicer. How do you communicate something that's hard in a better way? I love that. That's awesome. Wow. Well, Isaac, you have anything for the good of the order before we go?
Nope, I would just say, just lastly, want to wrap up. If you really do struggle in this a little bit, I would encourage you listen to or read Leslie Vernick's book, The Emotionally Destructive Marriage. You can get it on Amazon, Audible, anywhere. If you, I love she. If you listen to it on Audible, she reads it, and she is an excellent communicator. She's on
Okay.
YouTube and stuff. So Leslie Vernick, and she is a great like. She can really make it clear whether you believe you are in a destructive marriage or just more in a disappointing marriage. So that is a tool that you can use from the comfort of your own home.
Well, that's awesome. I appreciate your time today, everybody. We appreciate your time today. This has been Pat Lynn and Isaac Johnson. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts, or you want us to talk about something that you need to process and think, hey, that'd be a good topic for the show, you can email us at taketheword for it@gmail.com. And until next time, have a fantastic week and be blessed, everybody. Goodbye.